operations. And I just wanted to, well, first off, welcome you all and say thank you for coming out. Number two, just kind of give a rundown of how tonight's evening's going to work. To start, we are going to have someone introduce JD. After that, JD will make an opening statement. Following that portion of the evening, we will have a Q&A portion. This is, you know, it's if you got something to say, please say it, but it should be a question. We are trying to keep these questions to 2 minutes maximum. I mean, there's a lot of folks here, which we are super happy about. But, you know, we're trying to get through everybody or as many people as we can. If we are unable to get to you or get to your question, please feel free to write your question down on an index card, which you'll be able to find it on the table that is right outside the door that you signed in on. There will be a pen and an index card. Please place your name and email address on it, and we will get back to you in a timely manner as we can. I think that's just about the whole gist of the questions part of it. Does anybody have any questions about the questions? I know that's funny how that starts out, right? Okay, so I didn't see any hands. All right. After the questions portion is over, what we're going to do is JD is going to make a final closing remark, and we will end the evening. Again, thank you all for coming, and I'd like to welcome Katie to the floor.
Hello, everybody. I'm Katie Jarvis, and I am a Regional Vice President of Iowa and Chapter President of Phi Theta Kappa International Honor Society. And I would like to introduce J.D. Schulte, congressional candidate challenging incumbent Representative Steve King for U.S. Congress in Iowa's 4th District. J.D. is the fifth generation Iowan born in Ames, Iowa. He's played baseball in 7 countries. His legal career has taken him to Minneapolis and Seattle. According to his website, his family raised him to believe that hard work, civility, and community are the values we should all aspire to. And he is committed to living those values through his campaign to beat Steve King. Well, let JD start off, and then he's happy to take questions and discuss your concerns on the government today. Please welcome JD Schulte.
Can everybody hear me? I'll walk here in a little bit, but this is wonderful to have this big a crowd, and I just want to say thank you, Carroll County. I usually start things off by letting folks know that the average person in Congress is 58 years old with a net worth of $1 million, and I'm different. I'm 20 years younger, and I'm about $1 million short of that average. And I like to say that because I'm frustrated with a lot of things that are happening on the congressional level and not things that are out in D.C. And a lot of it is because of the way campaigns are run and the way that the finance has to go to run for Congress and run for the House of Representatives. You tend to see people with wealth overly represented in D.C., And so one of the big things that we've been trying to do is show that income diversity and get people who are there to work for the working class to get them out in D.C. And that's a big message of ours because I believe in a government that is of the people, by the people, and for the people. And we can't have a government like that unless you meet with the people. And that's one thing that we've been committed to this whole entire campaign. And so I'll talk a little bit about my bio and everything. I come from Sioux City. To kind of get to know a little bit more about me, my dad is from Larchwood, the very northwest corner of this district and of Iowa. My mom's from a farm outside of Lake Mills, which is the northeast corner of this district. They met as high school teachers in Mason City. I was born in Ames, and my mom reminds me every birthday that I was 10 pounds, 2 ounces. We were living in Nevada at the time, and then when I was age 4, my family moved to Sioux City because my dad got the head baseball job at Morningside College. When I was 11, I played on an all-star team and won a national NBC World Series just right over here at the ballpark. And so I ended up graduating from East High School, went to college. After college, played professional baseball a little bit. I was blessed enough to play in 7 different countries. And after baseball, I ended up working as a paralegal. That brought me up to Minneapolis and then out to Seattle. I worked mostly in intellectual property and in technology and innovation. So we launched this campaign 14 months ago, and the one thing that we were really committed to do was get out to the people. And I put 35,000 miles in my personal vehicle. We ended up buying a used RV. You might have seen it out there. We went to all 39 counties for the second time in that thing. And then tonight is our second town hall, which we plan to do a town hall in all 39 counties. So this will be our third 39 county tour. And the reason we wanted to do this is because my focus of this campaign is to have a better engagement with our constituents and different than what the current representative is doing. And so we're out here and we talk about a lot of different things, and so I'll talk about a few issues now and then we're going to open it up for questions. And the first thing I'd like to talk about is healthcare. I'm going around this entire county, or I'm sorry, this entire district, and it's the number one issue that we talk about. Whether right now agriculture is getting hit pretty hard, but when I do my farmer roundtables, it's usually the thing that dominates the conversation is about healthcare. And so my stance on it is we need a public option to stabilize the markets. We need a Medicare buy-in at 55 plus to allow folks who want to retire to do so. And then we need to get a handle on prescription drug prices. My long-term vision is something like a Medicare for all, or Medicare for all. I'm very flexible. If there's another avenue to get more people covered at a more cost-effective way, I'm all for that. But there's two things I absolutely need to have. One, when I filled that RV up with gas at a gas station, you see a donation box. We see it pretty often. And it's usually from somebody who just got sick or somebody who just got in an accident. And we're the wealthiest country in the world, and that's how people pay for their health care. And I find that unacceptable. And you see like sites like GoFundMe, and one of three GoFundMe sites are for healthcare related costs. And then you see that bankruptcy, 60% of all bankruptcies are medical related. And of that 60%, 72% of those folks had health insurance. And so the system's broke. And that's one reason I want to do it. And then the second part of the healthcare that I absolutely need to have, we need to get a better handle on mental health. You see right now, farmer suicides are up. That's unacceptable. You see 22 veterans a day nationwide commit suicide, and that's unacceptable. And so those are two areas where I'm pretty passionate about. Talk about education. When I graduated high school, we were first in the nation in education. And I remember that one year we fell behind Minnesota and everybody got mad. And we don't see that anymore. And we need to return that investment in education. You see it on the state quarter. It's the foundation in education. We're the only state to have a schoolhouse on our state quarter. And so that's who we are as Iowans, and I want to get back to that. And that means we got to make sure that teachers are doing well, but we also need a pipeline to teachers. And so it's schools like this and DMAC here and across the district, Iowa State and Morningside College. We need to create incentives to create more teachers. The other part of it is we need to get a way that we invest in education where we don't view college and university that equals debt. We got to find ways to invest in our education, because we find that one of the best ways to invest in the economy is invest in education. And it's a long-term return on investment, but it's imperative. And so so that brings me into the economy. Right now, you hear a lot of talk about the economy's doing well. And what I see and what I see in the 4th District is different than what we see nationally. There's 60% of Americans can't handle a $500 emergency. 60%. And you see that a stat that the average 30-year-old makes what a 30-year-old did 30 years ago. At a time when tuition costs are at all-time high and student loans, at a time when healthcare is at an all-time high, and at a time when housing's at an all-time high. And so, and it brings me to my point, and what, again, I see this throughout the district, is I just had my high school 23 union. And the kids that I talked to, my classmates, they're doing great things, whether they went straight into the workforce or they went to college first. And the struggle that I see is that the majority of them aren't in Sioux City, and they're not in this district. At best, they're in Des Moines or Omaha, or most likely they're in Kansas City or Minneapolis. And that's the one thing. We're losing our workforce. We're losing our kids. And I want to change that narrative. And then last thing, as far as it goes to the economy, is agriculture. And I mean, we're right in the heart of things down here. And there's three things that the federal government right now are attacking our agriculture. The first thing is the consolidation of markets. And you see these corporate consolidations, and it's really putting pressure and squeezing farmers on the input side and the output side. The renewable fuel standards, the second thing. The President Trump campaigned on E15 year-round. I went to the Farm Progress Show in the last month, and Sonny Perdue said next week they'll announce E15 year-round. We are here today and we still don't have that. And what we're seeing is the EPA is giving these small refinery waivers, and so that adds corn in our bins, or the carryover, and that's pushing down corn prices. And then the third part is trade. We all know what's happening with trade, and basically it sums up right now is we're borrowing money from China to give to our farmers, not to sell their product to China. And that doesn't make too much sense. And the bailout, I refer to it as getting punched in the face and then getting an ice pack from the same person who's punching me in the face. If you don't punch me in the face to begin with, it's a lot better off. And so we're getting hit hard, and it's frustrating to me because I don't see New York real estate getting hit. I don't see Texas oil getting hit. I don't see Silicon Valley getting hit. We're bearing the brunt of this trade war, and I oppose this trade war. And the last thing, getting back, is and the last thing I want to talk about up front before we get to questions is special interests and what's happening in Washington. My campaign has proudly taken a pledge that we won't accept corporate PAC money. And the reason we do that is, again, getting back to a government that's of the people, by the people, and for the people. And so we're focused on a people power, and that's, we started off very humbly, and we've continued to grow and grow. And in fact, the first time I was in Carroll County, there was probably four people, and there's a lot more tonight. So with that, I just want to again say thank you very much for coming, and let's open it up for questions. Yes.
So you're kind of following Bernie Sanders' whole Medicare pay for all single payer system, or
well,
partly breastfeeding this as
well? For those who couldn't hear, am I following the Bernie Sanders Medicare for all? It's a little different because he wants Medicare for all right away, and honestly, I don't know what's in the entire bill of that because I haven't read it. But I want a step to get there. I don't think we should change a sixth of our economy radically because I don't know. We don't know how things are going to react to that. I'm for a gradual movement, but I am for a public option that, so we can at least be a stepping stone towards that.
Yeah. So are you for Obamacare too?
So Obamacare, we need to work on. It's
because I didn't like that part.
Yeah. So that's why we
have to pay for my kids if they weren't on my policy.
Right. So there's a few parts of Obamacare that I think are absolutely we need to have, and that's protecting pre-existing conditions, and it's the not having a lifetime cap. Those two things we need to protect. I think the lack of the public option is what really didn't make Obamacare what it really needs to be. And so we need to correct Obamacare.
I don't believe in a repeal. I feel with having a public option, it's going to stabilize premiums. But they expect premiums to go up by 10% because of the tax bill that was passed. And that's going to start in October.
Yeah, but there's a lot of new Congress there that won't pass it if you do get a good bill like that, because they're in their set ways and they don't want to change anything, because then they have to report their constituents that they're changing this, and they don't want to, and if it fails, they don't want to take the blame for it.
Right. Well, I mean, there's
because they're trying to blame everybody else for it right now.
Right. And I'll say there's a lack of courage in politics. And right now, this is why I'm doing these 39 counties, is because I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm willing to come out to the people and have them ask me whatever they want. I have no idea who's in this room. I'm assuming there's a lot more Democrats than others, but I don't know party affiliation. And we invited everybody, and it's to be accessible, because I believe in being transparent and having a transparent government.
Do you have a question?
Yeah,
here.
Oh, yes.
How do you figure you can straighten this mental health thing out? Because that idiot Christ that just took everything down when he closed those institutions and cut all that funding, and you know, these people need help.
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't do any good to throw somebody in jail or execute them after they hurt somebody.
Right.
I mean, they need to be helped. Before this happens, and sure, it's going to cost some money, but all we hear is, oh, I'm going to cut taxes. Hey, this stuff costs money.
Right, and the question was about mental health and what can we do for it. And we are, and that's, it's, what's happened in mental health in Iowa has been more of a state issue thing. But like I said, when I want a healthcare system, when we focus on healthcare in D.C., I want to make sure that it's, the mental health within that. Because where are we, 49th or 50th in mental health beds?
Yeah. Branson just totally tip-turvy of the whole system, I think.
49th. Right, and it's very frustrating. Right, and we're having a huge issue in Sioux City with where our mental health beds are and trying to find out what region we want to go into. And so it's right now at the local level, we're getting failed at least in where I'm from. And then in the state level, we're definitely getting failed. And then nationally, we're failing at it too. Because people end up in the ER or in prison, and those are the two most expensive places.
I didn't realize we were 49th. We were that far.
Yeah.
That's bad.
That's just me hearing a lot of people who ran for governor having to listen to all those speeches. I believe we're 49th because they kept on saying that. So I don't know that stat, but I heard it more times than not. So.
Can you speak up?
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes?
I was going to ask, along with the mental health issues, people with a dual diagnosis and mental health issues and alcoholism and addiction, how are we going to put that all together? How are we going to be able to afford to maybe have more availability for people that have both of those issues, because they run hand in hand most times. How are you going to include that with the mental health?
Like in a healthcare system?
Yeah, with the drug addiction, alcoholism.
Yeah, I think it's, it's just, we need to have better care of our people, regardless. Having facilities and regional facilities where we can have that outreach and everything, that's how we do it. And we have to create the infrastructure to do that. And so there's ways to have the national blanket of the insurance part of it, but then also working on an infrastructure program that matches it. We lack the common good anymore in Congress. And that's the biggest thing that I'm frustrated with is, you know what, I don't mind having a debate with people who don't necessarily agree with me, but if we're both trying to get at it from a different angle, we can work together, and that's what politics used to be, and it's very frustrating where we are right now.
Well, having Vermont as a, sorry to interrupt, but having Vermont as a Medicare single payer for all system, that was made on a state level, not a federal level.
Right.
So Iowa, what you're saying is Iowa, we need to worry about first matching, and then D.C. can match us, because if we wait to match D.C., if I take a long time.
Right. The easier, quick, the quick fix is Des Moines fixing this. But with the tax cuts, it's getting hit pretty hard on funding. And before I forget, there are two candidates that I know that are here who are, I'll announce, Jake Thompson. What district are you in?
District 10, so Calhoun County.
All right. And then... and Peter Leo, he's in this district. Are there any other candidates? Did I forget? Okay.
So, in response to the last question and questions about healthcare, you pointed out that to see any immediate change right now, you've got to be looking at the state level. And I guess my
Not necessarily. It's just easier at the state level than it is.
Yeah. I don't think so. But it depends on what stage you're in.
Right.
It depends on what stage you're in. And so my question is what do you think is the role of the federal government in today's world?
Right.
You know, when the federal government started, it was a lot about having this centralized government and states' rights.
Right.
But we're now 200 plus years from that. We have a world economy. We have a national economy. And let's face it, Iowa is... we're a taker state, not a donor state. We're not as big a donor state as California.
Okay.
Let's just put it there. From our tax base.
Right.
We don't have the people.
Yeah.
We don't have the people.
Right.
And so, how do you feel about it? What do you think is the role of the federal government? Because the folks who are there now and came in with this administration are all about this saying, send it back to the states. If you want health care, people of Iowa,
I would say that I would love the federal government not to be part of the healthcare system, but for decades we have failed, and now it's a necessity. I don't want a bigger government. I don't want a smaller government. I just want a better government, and I feel that's something that people understand. And like, there's not another solution. On our campaign, we call folks and ask them what side do you think you're on, and try to engage in different folks, and we talk to a lot of independent voters, some of them might be here. And we talked to a woman last week who her husband had a stroke. They own a farm, can't remember where it's at, but it doesn't matter. And they ended up were selling the farm that week because they couldn't handle the health care bills. And we hear more stories like that. And when you hear all these stories of people who don't have health care and who are working full time and doing everything right and they still can't afford health care, it's a broken system. And I feel it's our responsibility to fix that. If there's other ways, other solutions to not get the government to do it, I'm for it. But I have not seen that in decades of studying what's happening. Yes?
What are your views on gun control?
So what are my views on gun control? So my neighbor has a truck the size of Texas. He caucused for Trump. And he has 5 AR-15s. And so him and I don't always see eye to eye on everything. But we both can agree that I don't mind. He's a great neighbor. He, when I'm gone on these trips and living out of my RV, he mows my lawn. And I don't mind that he has those 5 AR-15s because he's a responsible citizen. He's never been in trouble with the law. But we both are not satisfied with the shooter in Parkland, the shooter in Orlando, the shooter in Las Vegas, and all those. And so this notion that it's either gun safety or the Second Amendment, I think is a false thing. We can absolutely have both. And right now, it's very frustrating because there's just one side in Washington that just doesn't respond. And so they're willing to respond, there's really not much we can do. But we absolutely have to end the violence that's happening.
So, So you were responsible for proposing, you've been elected, and you're going to propose your first piece of legislation being some kind of responsible gun control. How would that work?
Well, my first thing would be healthcare. And so,
I understand.
But you're saying hypothetical?
I'm asking about guns, because I feel like you just sort of kind of said, I got a neighbor with 5 AK-47s, and I'm okay with that. I'm not.
Well, with my neighbor.
I'm not okay with your neighbor having those 5 guns. I don't know who your neighbor lets into his house, and I don't know about his
But
I don't know how the guns are secured.
Right.
And there is no reason for anyone, a regular citizen, to have that kind of assault rifle.
Well,
don't hunt with it. Why does he have it?
Well, because it's a constitutional right, and that's the struggle.
Is it? And that's my question.
He has the right to bear arms, and then there's the discussion, and that's the discussion we need to have. What purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And there lies the discussion. We need to have that debate.
Is that even a law thing, or is that a judge thing? Is that a Supreme Court thing or a legislature thing?
Well, and
does it even matter what your views are on that, or is that just up to the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, they could find our law unconstitutional, and if we did something with that. I see this is what's going to happen. It's going to be a limitation on bump stocks, which I think most people are for. It's going to be universal background checks, an expansion on universal background checks. That's what I'm for. The CDC was not allowed for the last 20 years to study gun violence. Until we have an answer from the CDC on what, because it's been illegal to study that, with the omnibus bill in the last year, it's now allowed for them, they're allowed to study, but there's no funding going to it.
What is the CDC?
Oh, sorry, Center for Disease Control. So I view those are the avenues of how we correct this. Ammunition, I think that's how it's going to be done. Because if there's not a way to somehow control or create gun safety with what's happening with the guns, I think it's going to be the ammunition side. And so that's the pathway that's going to go. I'm not, like, in all honesty, when I get there, I'm a freshman from Iowa. And so there's limited with what I can do. I'm willing to work with folks on the issue, but we absolutely, like the kids are studying, or when kids are go to school now, they have to have safety precautions that we've never had. And so we need to, it's scary. And so to do nothing is not an answer. And I'll completely agree with you there, but we have to do something, it's tough.
And you don't think we have the constitutional right to take guns, certain kinds of guns?
I believe there is a level there, but honestly, I don't know. I've hunted a couple times in my life. I don't know guns that well, but there is an absolute level there that there are things that are too powerful.
As a stepping stone, would you support a red flag law, something where loved ones or people who are familiar with people who own weapons or exposed weapons could have a temporary restriction in place?
Like domestic violence and
sure.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I have a question. Am I misinformed? I hear some countries, some states have laws that work and the crime rate goes down, yet we don't take after them and follow their methods.
Well, it's not
like New York or England, for instance.
Yeah, well, it's in our Constitution, and so that's the struggle. Like, I want gun safety. I want to get there. I just, we're limited with what we can do with the law.
Doesn't the NARCAM law that's been driving down violence?
Everyone talks about Chicago and how there's no.
Yeah, I heard about Chicago.
Right, and there's not a gun shop in Chicago, but they lead the nation in violence. Let's go back there.
Just going off the way, most of the shootings do happen in no gun zones.
what she said. AR does not stand for assault rifle either. It is the original brand that made it. And just my main question is just like in school, what's your view on like resource officers in school, trained professionals that are armed?
Right.
Well, for that.
That in training, the ALICE training, there's a national program that helps train responders and everything like that. I think that's something that's the direction we need to really like train when there's an active shooter, how to prepare people better. Unfortunately, that's the reality of the world we live in. In the way back.
How can we approach the issue of these universal background checks in regards to people with mental illness with the HIPAA
right.
laws?
Right.
Because most of these shootings that are happening, and like you said, they're in the no guns.
Right.
Everybody's vulnerable.
Right.
And they're usually people, I mean, that have a mental illness, something's happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, you know, what do you do about that?
Yeah.
You
know? That's why things are happening. We're kind of handcuffed.
I know.
Yeah. Yes.
So you mentioned that the CDC has kind of been handcuffed about investigating gun violence
mm-hmm.
As a trend and how it affects health and development. And you mentioned that Iowa ranks very poorly as far as mental health care. We're actually 51st.
Okay.
We're ranked 51st,
okay.
Including the District of Columbia. We have 2 state beds per 100,000 residents.
Okay, nice.
The national average is 12 state beds per 100,000 residents. So we're not just behind, we're very, very far behind. One of the things that the CDC has been studying is the effect of gun violence and exposure to violence on young children.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that putting resource officers in schools that have guns
right.
and subjecting children to that being the norm has lifelong, not only physical health consequences because of the increased cortisol levels and stress in their little bodies, but also mental health concerns, so it becomes cyclical. You have these kids that you're exposing to violence because you're trying to protect them and you're turning them into adults that have mental health issues. How do you connect gun violence, gun safety to mental health, not just in providing mental health coverage, but to increasing the number of beds available in Iowa so that we're not making our toddlers into the mental health patients of tomorrow? You know,
right.
We talk about doing these background checks. We have 2 state beds per 100,000 people. We're not dying. We're not diagnosing our residents.
Right.
They're not going to get red flagged
right.
going to buy a gun because they're not getting into mental health facilities.
Right.
So how do we fix that?
Right. I mean, it's an investment in health and mental health. That's it. That's the. Like,
so how do you get the beds?
More beds.
To Iowa?
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to work on it on the federal side through funding, but it's ultimately the state, unless we have it overall fund role. Federal program for all 50 states.
Yeah, just to share an idea. I had a conversation with a guy who trains people to get their concealed weapon permit. And what we both agreed on was the fact that in America today, when you buy an automobile, it has a number. And you have to go to the courthouse, and you have to register that vehicle. And you have to get a driver's license, and you have to be trained how to use that vehicle before you can get a license. And if you are found incapable of operating that vehicle, you don't have a license. Why don't we do the same thing with firearms?
They do have serious.
I think the NRA missed the boat when they've taken this stand of absolute against.
Right.
The NRA could contract with the federal government to do gun training across the nation, and it would be a good thing. But that's not what we talk about. There's a difference between gun ownership and responsible gun ownership. There's a difference between your right and your right to be responsible. And we don't look at an automobile registration. It's harder to to operate and register and own an automobile in this country than it is a handgun. And we need to start having that conversation about what's the right thing. You know, should we be selling guns, you know, on the internet? Should we be selling them at gun shows? Or should the legitimate dealers who go through all the training and all the paperwork, shouldn't that be where you go to buy your gun? Just like you go to an automobile dealer to do it. So that's just an idea, but we need to start thinking about it differently. And it's not going to change until we start electing people that want to help us with the problems that we're facing instead of just taking an absolute stand on it.
I agree. And then, I mean, this is the last thing probably on guns. Let's move. It's easier to buy a gun in America than it is to vote in some places. And there's a constitutional amendment to protect guns, and there's not for voting rights. And the other part of it is, we live in a country that if you're on the terrorist watch list, you can go in and you can still buy a gun. So, anyways, if we can move on, there's a lot of other subjects we can talk about.
Well, I'm going back to her mental health.
Okay.
I think one of the problems that we can solve is by electing Mr. Hubble as our governor. He has a great program in regard to mental health. And I just think that's one of the places we need to start. So.
Yes.
Going back to healthcare and healthcare costs, what are some of your thoughts as far as reining in costs, as far as hospital stays and prescription drugs? And
well, with prescription drugs, one thing I'm frustrated with is, I worked in patents for a while, and we invest in college universities like University of Iowa, and then they end up selling their product to someone who owns a patent, and then they can do kind of free will with what they have. And what we're seeing is they buy them and then they skyrocket the price, and that's that it hurts the common good, and I'm frustrated with that. Because that's taxpayers' dollars going in to do the research often, but sometimes it's private, and then it's end up getting sold. So with the pharmaceutical companies, it's a lot, like I mentioned earlier, with the special interests, and they tend to dictate the pricing and the lobbying, and there's a lot of talk about calling them out if we get the right people elected. And so that would drown prices down. And then the third part of that is administration costs. When you go to get healthcare, 30% of your bill tends to be administration costs right now. And that's the most in any country. And right now we spend the most per person, even before Obamacare, we spent the most per person on healthcare. And we have some of the least amount of benefits to show for it. So we're not getting very good bang for our buck right now.
I just have a question about the patents, because I mean, if you worked in IP, you're probably aware that companies can change the patent just a little bit and repatent it. So
yeah.
What happens? I mean, and we also have the other issue with PACs,
right.
And I can say, you know, the NRA has the biggest PAC ever,
right.
And then there's the pharmaceutical PAC.
Right.
So how, you know, there's a lot of components to all this,
mm-hmm.
It's, and patent laws being one of them, and then PACs being another.
Right. Yeah. that's why we need folks to clean that up and have more transparency. Yes.
What are your views on immigration?
So the question was our view on immigration. So. We need immigration reform. We haven't had it since 1986 on the federal side. And what I've been seeing in this district is something similar to what we saw in Greene County in the last harvest. They needed about 40 people to work to help with the harvest, and they didn't have one U.S. citizen apply for the job. We have a pork plant in Sioux City, and then there's a new one in Eagle Grove. Both executives have said we don't have the labor force to work those shifts. Go around to a couple businesses here in town and in Carroll County. Number one thing they talk about is the workforce. And it goes back to my classmates moving away. And so we absolutely need immigration reform. And what it looks like to me is having a visa program that matches our modern economy. We need secure borders, but we need a pathway to residency and a pathway to citizenship for the folks who are here. Because there's right now about 11 to 14 million undocumented people, and that's 3 to 4 size of Iowa. To get rid of everybody, that cost expense, or what that effect is gonna have on the economy, it is dangerous. And so we need to, we absolutely need. And it's one of the biggest frustrations. You see something like DACA or the DREAM Act, 90% of Americans, over 90% of Americans want that. Yet we don't have a Congress that's even willing to put it on the floor, where every Democrat and half the Republicans would vote for it and it would pass. But they won't put that on the floor. And I'm frustrated with what's happening out there. So, yes?
But also to the fact about immigration and legal. Carroll and Crawford County have the largest amount of people on government-assisted programs that don't work when they could work, and they're very healthy, and we have jobs. Why is it that they don't put these people to work and not worry so much about the illegal immigrants who are working and doing jobs that apparently nobody else wants to do? I don't understand. I'd like to see reform in that capacity, because there are.
I'll say in the last farm bill. So the question was about people who are living here, who are on food stamps with and subsidies like that, but aren't working.
Right.
Okay. So in the
when
last.
You say living here? You mean here in the United States?
No, here, as in Carroll County and Crawford County.
Crawford
County.
County.
Sorry. Thank you. And so in the last farm bill, there was a job training program that was supposed to be implemented that would help with that. But it hasn't been funded or it hasn't developed. And so...
I know. I understand job training. I understand all that. But, why is it that you don't need a degree, or you don't need job training to work at McDonald's, Burger King, Walmart, other
right.
places like that. You don't need that, and yet they're looking for people to work, and they can't find enough people to work.
Right.
But there are people that are able to, and we're subsidizing them to stay home.
Here's the other part of that is we talk about wage stagnations, and so somebody who's working on $9 an hour, they work a full-time job, they don't have enough to pay for a one-bedroom apartment, a car to get them from A to B, or a cell phone. When
they don't need a cell phone.
Or okay. Or a telephone. Or a telephone. So.
Yes, I understand that. But
the issue about people staying home, like, I mean, first of all, there's no like data on that. How these people that just stay home, like they don't want to go to work, like that's like an anecdote, that's not data.
No.
And you can't really do things about that. Like there's no, you can't force people to work. Like there's no law that can be put in place.
No, they can't force them to work.
So why are you asking them like that?
Well, because I'm asking why we should subsidize them.
Because you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can't just throw out the government
no.
programs.
No.
Here's,
that's fine.
Here's,
government programs are
here's,
fine.
Here's what I want to do. I want to, my vision of this district is we have a lot of potential. we have a lot of potential. I like to call it the new rural economy with bringing in technology jobs here, to bring in advanced manufacturing and continue to embrace our traditional agriculture. And when we do those, we're going to lift. And I see so much potential here. I've worked in innovation in Seattle, and I come back here, and here's my frustration. When I decided to move back home, and the reason I decided to move back home is because of my grandma. My grandma's the biggest influence I have in my life. And the last thing she told me before she passed was, you need to move back to Iowa and take care of the farm. And so when I looked in Sioux City Journal, so our farm's on the other side of the district, and we rented out, so it's not like I would come from it. But when we moved back, when I was looking to move back to Sioux City, the best job I could find in the Journal for about a month was $15 an hour and no benefits. And I'm working in one of the best economies in the world, in Seattle. And I moved back because my heart's here. But financially, it was a horrible decision.
Right.
And that's, I want to change that. And for us to continue to but by me coming back and changing the narrative on that, I want to create more jobs. Jobs that are attractive, that allows us to live a free, productive, and successful life. And you know what? If my neighbor's struggling, we lift them up. And that's my goal in all of this.
And I understand.
Yeah,
real quick, I want to get this. We have one education question.
All right.
So being a long-time educator, coach, administrator, now retired, I need to ask that. I'm Rich Stoppers from Coon Rapids. First of all, I'm very concerned about public education school. I really like your approach about investing in schools. Mm-hmm. We either pay for it now or pay for it later. And we've got great schools in West Central Iowa, small. What's your thoughts on the educational, a lot of different ways to state it, but the voucher, the school vouchers for private schools,
yeah.
which we all know this pot of money is getting smaller. Basically because of who's in
right.
The legislature, who's in power right now in Iowa. So with the pot getting smaller, and we looking at divesting into other areas in education, what's your thoughts on the school voucher?
I come from a long line of educators and farmers, and I was blessed to be in public education, and I think public education, or public money should go to public education.
I'm going to in a second.
Yeah, okay. It's just one thing we see nationally. Vouchers don't work in Iowa. I mean, you go up here, you're a little bit surrounded by folks, but when you go further up northwest, when things get kind of stretched out, consolidation has already hurt a lot of schools. And then you add, like, if there's a voucher, what are you supposed to do? Drive an hour and a half to go to school for that charter school? It just doesn't make sense in this district or in Iowa, I feel. So,
okay, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we do have to close the question and answer portion of this evening. As mentioned at the beginning,
Two more questions.
All right.
We'll go right here.
Okay, my question is about the refugees.
Yeah.
So now, like in Carroll, we have a lot of refugees here in Carroll, but it's hard for them to find a job because of the language barrier.
Yep.
So, and it's hard for them to stay here. There is a job they can do, but a lot of jobs now, you have to go online and apply.
Yeah.
And it's hard for them to apply for the job, and it's hard for them like to communicate with the school or even to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we have here in DMET, we have English as a second language.
Yeah.
But they need time, like the government need to help them,
mm-hmm.
support them, and then they can go to school and learn the language, so and then they can do the job work, help themselves do other things. So, yeah.
So the question was about refugees coming here and the language barrier and everything. And so that's why I think it's so important for campuses like this, like DMAX and Western Iowa Tech and for job placements. And that's why we need to invest in them to make sure that we give you all the opportunities to succeed. And you see different programs throughout the district. Right now in Cherokee, they're trying to solve their problem of the workforce by Western Iowa Tech has a satellite office of a campus up there. And what they're doing is they got their community together in Cherokee, and the businesses up there decide, you know what, if a kid's willing to go to school there and give the next 3 years of their life to stay in Cherokee, they'll pay for it. And they just started that this past month, and I think that's something that's really interested in Iowa and in this district. Yeah. Last question? Yes. Yep.
My argument in favor of our sheriff's report was that they didn't like because marijuana was illegal. That gets to Part B. Why is it a 10-year sentence in Texas and a misdemeanor in Ann Arbor?
All right.
And that would also take care of privatized prisons.
All right. That was a big last question.
Do you smoke marijuana?
I don't. But I lived in Seattle when they passed the law to make it, they legalized it. And I'll say this, the same parks that smelled like weed still smell like weed. But the state government had a lot more money. With industrial hemp. It's interesting because when we first became a nation, there was a law that said 10% of your land, if you were a farmer, had to be industrial hemp. The Constitution was written on industrial hemp. Industrial hemp we'll get into soil health and all that, and it's one of the best things for our soils, which we're losing half our topsoils in the last 100 years. And so I'd be interested in industrial hemp, and I think there's a lot more people in Washington who are for that. We need a little bit more diversity. Anytime you have diversity or options in farming, it's better. And I think most farmers can agree to that. And that's why we're, so I'd be for changing that. Thank you very much. Is this it?
All
right, so he's a stickler. He's my
director of operations. Yeah. It's been a long day, folks.
I call him my fixer. But he's not going to go to jail. I just want to say thank you very much for coming tonight. And I know it's on a Wednesday night, you could be anywhere, and I appreciate you guys coming here. I believe in America, and I believe in Iowa, in this district, and I wanted to make a change, and that's why we launched the campaign 14 months ago. If you did not get your question asked, come see Patrick or Annette's back there. We will answer every question you have. We want to be accessible. And so I'll stick around a little bit after this, but we have to leave town. I appreciate you guys being here, and I just want to say that there's an election November 6th. And if you like what I had to say, or if you have any question or anything, engage with us. If you like what I had to say, tell your neighbor. This race, what I'm running in, is going to come down to raise within margin. Every vote is going to matter. We had polling that shows we're with 6% away on a race that traditionally is 20% or 22%. I'm running because I want change. I want change out in D.C. I'm frustrated with the lack of transparency. I'm frustrated with the lack of accountability. I'm frustrated with a lot of things. And I used to just complain. But then I got to a point where I said, either I need there's a couple things. And again, this is a lot of what I'm doing is a promise to my grandma. But anyways, I'll leave it with this. In November 6th, if you want change like I want change, at the very least, I need your vote. If you really want change, knock a couple doors, make a couple phone calls. That's how we're going to change the narrative in this district, in Carroll County, and throughout Western Iowa. I have a vision for what I want to see in the future of this district, and I want to make that happen. So I'm just very grateful again for everyone to be here. My name is J.D. Scholten, and I stand tall for all.